bad. How are you?
Pretty good. I've been just doing this podcast.
I guess you have. Jeez.
Yeah.
Is this number 20 or 453 or something like that?
It's 20, yeah. It's fun. It's easy. It's not easy, but it's easier than doing like an entire director's filmography. So where have you been?
Where have I been? I have been sitting here looking at my piles of discs, wondering when the hell my shelving was going to be done, and now it is. You know, I was taking a bit of a sabbatical this spring, and mm-hmm. it got to be about June 1st, and I was officially stating that the sabbatical was over, and I'm looking at all my discs laying all over the place. I'm like, I'm not ready for this yet. But now that I've got them all up on the shelves, in my beautiful, beautiful shelves, I'm actually ready to rejoin the community.
All right. And I you did post those shelves. So, and by the way, everybody, Keith Enright, the completionist, is finally back in the show.
Hey.
Actually, when's the last time you podcasted with us or anybody? Well, actually, it might be hour seven.
It was hour seven, which is quite a while ago now.
Yeah.
And my long gestating Criterion Completion podcast, sort of in the middle of hour eight right now. I will tease and say that I have a really good interview with Matthew Gasteyer just sitting there. I have not gotten around to
Matt
completely
Gasteyer.
Finishing it up. Yes.
Oh, no, just leave it.
Oh, okay.
Matt's going to kill me.
Of course he will.
No, I'm sure it's a great interview. In fact, I want to hear. I talk to Matt all the time, probably every day. And
yeah,
there's probably a lot I'd be interested to learn. Well, I'm glad to have you back, and glad to, I guess, kind of break the sabbatical. I guess.
Yes. Welcome. Thank you very much.
I wanted you on. I pretty much every week I want you on, but I think I had you on very early in this podcast. So really earlier this year. Probably January, February, and now it's June, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man.
I know. We've come a long way, baby.
That's right.
So, well, we start with what we've been doing, and you kind of mentioned your shelving. Do you want to get into that more? I've seen the pictures, so I know that it was quite an endeavor, and that's a big deal for people like us.
It is. It is. Well, this is the second time that I've built custom shelving for my discs. The first time was back in 2004, when I had, you know, maybe 200, 250 discs, and I built this cute little wall unit, or I had it built, of course, I shouldn't misrepresent myself. I had a cute little shelving unit built for a pocket in the wall, thinking, wow, this will be all the room that I ever need. And I filled that up by about 2007. Probably the way I solved that was by moving, and now that I'm here in a condo in downtown Minneapolis, I had a prefab unit that had, oh, I think 66 linear feet of space. I was using about 54 of it, and I was getting nervous. So last year I decided that I wanted to make some custom units again that were built just for this. People look at you funny when you're building, you know, physical media shelving these days. What are you doing that for? But, so yeah, I had it put in last week. It took a long time. Like I said, my discs were sitting all over the place for 3 or 4 months. And I think I went from, like I said, from 66 linear feet to 99 linear feet. And actually, when I posted a picture, I had no idea how many that would even hold. And I don't know how somebody did this, but they figured it out just from looking at the picture when I only had, you know, a few dozen discs on the shelf. And they figured out that I could put 1,650 discs on there.
Wow.
Which sounds really cool, and almost it's pressure already. I'm like, I just built these things. That doesn't sound like so far away. But the way I figured out at Criterion's current rates, I think I have about 12 years worth of space to go.
Okay.
So, at that point,
you can get a new house in 12 years. Just save up now.
I think so.
Get a house just for your shelving unit, and then people will look even funnier in 12 years.
Well, I think the last time we talked, you were talking about, you know, taking over your neighbor's condo. I might have to do the same thing.
She hasn't heard that episode. Thank you.
Oh, that's good. That was hour seven. So now I have enough space for all the discs. I have a space right next to it for all the laser discs, and for that geeky party that just wants to be able to look and touch and feel them, they're all in one spot right now. And
nice.
Even my girlfriend is really cool about it. So worked out well.
Nice. Well, congrats on that. And for those that don't know, Keith is the completionist. You have owned everything for a long while. And in fact, I saw a comment earlier that you've been collecting so long that really out of print doesn't really matter to you, because you got them all at original price, just about.
There were just a few, but I've never had to go through most of the pain of that, because most of the crazy out of print shenanigans started after I was complete in 2006. So I've never had to feel too much of that pain, although there have been a few.
Yeah, I think people are going to be throwing darts at their radio or at their podcast player right now. That's a necessary evil for the modern collector if you want to get these films. Well, so what I've been doing is I've kind of segued well into it with the last couple episodes, but we went on a beer tour this past weekend over in Asheville. And so we basically went from brewery to brewery. We really didn't get drunk, just more sampling things, and I had a great time. And in fact, if I was kind of a lightweight on the last episode, but after this weekend, if I was going to drink today, I would probably be just fine. You wouldn't notice, but I'm not going to, just because I've had my fill.
Really? I thought you were drunk right now.
No, I'm completely sober. We can change that maybe. Okay. But I think I found a love for sour beers, which is, that's probably pretty unique, but you take three sips of them, and after the strangeness goes away, they taste great, kind of like some Criterion films, that we might talk about.
Nice.
So I actually just got back in town a couple hours ago, and I didn't get to watch a whole lot of new movies. In fact, the announcements came out as I was road tripping, I just arrived, but it was a very quick 3-day weekend. So, you want to just dive into announcements, Keith?
Why not? I guess I heard there were some.
There were some, yeah. I think we wondered for a while. The 15th came and went, and the 15th just kind of seemed there wasn't much energy. I don't know what, and maybe it was because I knew I was going out of town, so it wasn't as big of a priority for me, but I didn't see a lot of the angry people, like, where are the, now? Of course there was some of that.
I usually put up a little snarky comment on the completion Facebook page, refresh, reflect, repeat, or something like that. And I even forgot to do that on Thursday. So I think the whole world just was not feeling the Criterion energy that day.
It's like going to a concert and everybody said, "All right, are you ready to rock?" And the crowd just kind of murmurs. That was Thursday. And then on Friday they said, "Are you ready to rock?" And everybody's like, "Yeah."
Yes.
There was an interesting, actually kind of a little academic, by a poster on Reddit who went through all the announcements for the last couple years and kind of did some math as to how often they were on time, how often they were late, how often they were late because it was a weekend or a holiday, and how often they just were late for no reason. And I guess we get a little spoiled by our 15th of the month, just kind of expecting it. But yeah, they're late pretty often. I think there was maybe five, six times, and you think about it, that's 2 years of probably in our little geek circles, a little bit of rage, maybe moderate rage. I don't think people get that upset, but
I'm pretty convinced that Criterion lately has subtly just been saying, calm down, everybody, and because even this month when it was late, they don't even, there was no apology or anything. It was just, nope, didn't happen.
Yeah, I think last year there was maybe a tweet saying, oh, okay, well, at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, okay, check back tomorrow. We're not putting them out today. But I think now they're just, maybe they've created this monster and maybe they're trying to send it back down into earth.
Tamp it down a little.
So I don't mind. I might have minded if it were Monday. Because, well, I wouldn't get to talk to you about it.
Well, there you go.
Or if it fell on a 15th, a Friday, and I'm sure that'll happen sometime soon. So I think when that happens, I'll just plan on not talking about that weekend. And if I get to, then nice surprise.
Mm-hmm.
So, we have quite a month. We have an out of print reissue or rescue and a lot of surprises this month.
I agree.
Out of left field. So let's start with the big surprise, I think, is Rebecca.
Yes.
Rebecca by Alfred Hitchcock. Have you heard of him?
Yeah, the British guy, right?
Yeah. He made some black and white films.
Oh, okay.
So Rebecca is based on the Daphne du Maurier novel. It was 1940. This was a little kind of a departure from Hitchcock's work. It's not as much of a thriller. It's kind of a romance, but with I don't want to say too much. Maybe a little bit of a MacGuffin somewhere buried
sure.
in between, but
sure.
but it's not like a. It's not like a Vertigo or a Lady Vanishes. I guess you could probably qualify it as a noir, but it's kind of outside of that bubble or near the periphery of that bubble. But this one was out of print, and actually I think nobody expected this. It got leaked that earlier that day with a screenshot, and lo and behold, it was announced a few hours later. So did you expect this, Keith?
I didn't. Not at all. I mean, they've been talking about more Hitchcock, and I always felt like it was going to be, you know, rescuing other things. Just, because these have been out of print for so long, it just felt like they were kind of lost. And, you know, for some reason, I was just kind of forgetting that they're getting stuff back these days. But it just seems like Alfred Hitchcock, prints or something that other studios or labels would still want to hold on to. So yeah, I was a bit surprised.
Yeah, it's going to sell some units. And this was part of a box set with not Suspicion. It was Notorious and Spellbound.
Spellbound, yeah.
Right. So
well, not necessarily a box set. It was three of the five in that box set that came
That's
out,
right.
The Wrong Men and Notorious Women, but
right.
Those as were the I was
MGM,
mentioning, right,
yeah.
right. As I was mentioning on one of the groups yesterday, I mean, I've had these as individual titles, again, going back to not worrying about out of print. I mean, I've had these for years.
Yeah.
I never even really thought of these in the box set context. So, I'm just very happy to get these individually too.
Yeah, it's interesting to see that kind of complaining. I haven't gone back and bought any of these three, but I guess if I had spent, and I don't know the going rate or what the rate was. Actually, the going rate now is probably about $2.
Yeah.
But 2 weeks ago, it might have been, I don't know, $100. I have no idea. It's not wasn't on my radar.
Right.
So I guess if I had spent $100 and then 2 weeks later I found that I lost 98% of that, I might be a little frustrated, so I guess I get it, but it's also kind of it's definitely a first world problem.
Absolutely.
So there's a 4K digital, a new 4K digital restoration. It looks like a lot of stuff is ported from the original release. There's a new interview with critic and author Molly Haskell and scholar Patricia White. So that might be sort of a visual essay of sorts. And then there's a new interview with special effects historian Craig Barron on the visual effects. And it's been a while since I've seen this. I actually saw it in college and loved it, but I don't remember the effects. I think I probably do remember one effect that if I brought up here would be a spoiler. But,
sure.
When's the last time you saw Rebecca?
I'm going to say at least a decade.
Yeah.
Yeah,
probably more than that for me. But I loved it when I saw it, and this was going back a ways. So I think I can't wait to revisit. And so we have a few months. A lot of people have been talking about the cover, and I think the cover is pretty gorgeous. I think for the film, it almost looks like a Turner film colorized frame, but not that vibrant ugliness
sure.
that Turner,
sure.
but maybe like a painted frame. Or actually, maybe it's black and white, and with just the Rebecca in the red font. That'll be coming on September 6th or 5th.
September 5th. I'm looking at the original cover here. The original cover it works in some way. It's kind of the painting and then kind of a black and white screenshot of the two main character, or not the two main characters, I'm forgetting the other person's name, but not Laurence Olivier, the two women. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's a nice looking cover. I will say that you mentioned, you know, that a lot of stuff was ported over. I do think that I'm going to be keeping the DVD set, because a couple of things that we are missing on the new one are Hitchcock on Rebecca with excerpts from his conversations with Truffaut.
Oh, nice.
And then, of course, the standard of the DVD days, but not so often on Blu-ray anymore, hundreds of behind-the-scenes photos, blah, blah, oh, blah. So,
right. So you know, click, click, click.
Click, click, click. I mean, it's nice to have them, but it's yeah. Often when you're going through those, it's like a exercise in willfulness just to get through it sometimes. But, I think this is definitely one I'm going to keep.
And when you have 12 years of shelf space, you know, why not?
Yeah, exactly.
It's just
exactly.
one more title. So yeah. So and the big news with that is MGM. There's apparently been a deal made at some point. We got Straw Dogs. We can assume that the other two Hitchcocks from this box are going to be a fair game. There's also the Bergman trilogy from MGM that all three have been on Filmstruck, and mm-hmm. I think it's wishful thinking they'll come to disc, but it's not guaranteed. I mean, we don't know how those rights work. It could be streaming rights, but there might be more MGM out of print rescues. I don't know how many. You're an expert on this sort of thing. Are there many others that we haven't received yet, or
what? Not off the top of my head. No, I can't think of one.
Well, I figured you know all this stuff off the top of your head.
Oh, come on now. But speaking of, I will put out my expertise on one other thing on this one, because I would be remiss to not mention that this is a Laserdisc reissue as well.
There you go. Okay. Is this the only one this month?
Well, technically two, if you count Othello for this month. So
okay. Well, we'll get two, to that. Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to September 12th and Lerner?
Yeah, Lerner.
Lerner. Murray Lerner's Festival is coming out. And this one, well, it's. I think it's kind of interesting that we're talking, because we talked about Bob Dylan, right?
Yes, we did.
So it's that's a package.
Connection,
yeah, with Festival. Festival, it hasn't gotten the buzz that a few of the other releases have gotten. However, I'd say that Criterion kind of has the market on these 60s and even 70s music documentaries, and this one is one of the more important ones. It actually, you could argue that it's among the most important, because it kind of, without this, there might not have been, you know, Don't Look Back, Woodstock, Gimme Shelter.
Monterey Pop, we might talk a little bit about.
We might.
Yeah.
So this one's more folk oriented. I think, I think Dylan's in there. And it's based on a couple years at the festival, so you're going to get a good variety of acts. Now, the people that think folk these days, you know, the folk back in the 60s, it's not Fleet Foxes, or it's not Kingston. Actually, it could be Kingston Trio, but it's a little hipper than that. Mm-hmm. So have you seen this before?
Never. Absolutely never.
Me neither. But it's been on my radar. It always comes up. You know, people talk about their influence, Pennebaker and Maisel's. They always cite this as an influence. So I'm actually super excited for this one. Are you with me there?
Yes, I am. I mean, this is just one of those things where you can tell it's just going to be a fantastic snapshot of time. And, you know, with some very intimate filming and getting to see these people up close, and just, you know, not getting a lot of, you know, a lot of documentaries that might go back and look at stuff like this would, you know, impose a lot of point of view and stuff like that on it. But this is just, I suspect, going to be the more the unvarnished, here's exactly what was going on. And I find that much more interesting.
Yeah, me too. So the performers listed on the Criterion site, and I'm sure there are plenty more, are Joan Baez, Bob Dylan, Helen Wolf, Johnny Cash, the Staple Singers, Pete Seeger, Sunhouse, and Peter, Paul, and Mary. I know about probably 70% of them.
I know all the names. I wouldn't know if I would know all the music. But.
Same here. I know a lot of the music, though. It's actually a pretty good list if you're into the 60s music. And so maybe some of the newer fans, I hate to say it, the millennial fans might not care as much, but and that's fine.
Yeah.
But it's part of the collection. It's another part. I can't think of many other music documentaries from the 60s that would be big sacred cows. Can you them to go after?
Well, you know, Woodstock, of course, but it's been well handled right. on its own yeah, by Warner Brothers and all that.
Extremely.
But,
yeah, that is a big one.
yeah. You might have heard of it. Yeah, I think they seem to be, they certainly seem to be hitting the touchstones. And whatever that I'm not thinking of, maybe it's very obvious and somebody's yelling at their podcaster right now, but I can't think of one.
I'm sure they will. People yell at their podcast every week. Usually it's about my pronunciation. In fact, we'll probably get to that as well. All right. Well, the next one is Kelly Reichardt. Did I pronounce that right?
I think you did.
Yeah, it's easier. I think so. Of course, I'm probably wrong. So Kelly Reichardt, so it's another female filmmaker. So that's definitely been a trend. And I like that we're getting more female filmmakers. And I think Reichardt, from what I've seen, is more than capable. But and I think it's cool that it's a new release from last year. So this is 2000. It's coming out September 19th. It's a 2016 film. It has Michelle Williams, Laura Dern, Kristen Stewart, Lily Gladstone. So it's very much it's a certain women.
There you go.
I don't know much about it. I've heard pretty good word of mouth. But mostly from Reichardt fans. I don't know that a lot of non-Reichardt fans seek out these films. So have you seen many Reichardt films? Have you seen this one?
No. I mean, for somebody who has seen some Reichardt, I've only seen the most obvious. I've seen Wendy and Lucy, and that's it. So I enjoyed that quite a bit, and I'm looking forward to this quite a bit.
That's one I haven't seen, but... Yeah, that's been on my list, and that Meek's Cutoff. I think I mentioned a show or two ago, the only one I've seen is Old Joy, which is very deliberate paced, I'd say. But I think that's Reichardt's thing, and I think that's fine, and that's great for Criterion. So because of everybody's excited about it, I guess I am too. It's going to be – in fact, I kind of enjoy a new blind buy from Criterion, even if sometimes it's jellyfish eyes, other times it's camera person. So,
you know, that's kind of what happens to me on months – I won't say necessarily this month, but, you know, when the announcements come out and you see a bunch of stuff that you're not necessarily familiar with, my first reaction can kind of be – oh, one of those months, and but then when you really start looking at the films and the descriptions and the list of special features, you get all excited all over again. So yeah, I'm with you. I'm really into a nice exposure to a blind buy.
Yeah, and not a lot of supplements. Speaking of which, there's Todd Haynes and Reichardt. Well, it's interviews with the cast and crew, including Reichardt and Todd Haynes. He was an executive producer. So if everybody's like, okay, Todd Haynes. Then an interview with Mael Molloy. Oh, that's the author of the story. That's really it. So pretty light on the features here. But that's fine with me. One thing from Reichardt, I think it'll look good. I think she has a definite aesthetic, so I'm looking forward to it for that. And a lot of people like the cover. We haven't talked about the covers yet. In fact, I'd say all three of the ones we've talked about here are fine. Festival, what are you going to do with a music festival cover? It's basically just little blocks of the artist,
They cover a lot of ground there, and I'm sure that'll help sell some discs, so people can see that Dylan's on the cover and all that.
Exactly. No need to illustrate something avant-garde for a music festival. So speaking of blind buys, actually we have three titles coming out on September 26th. So I'll start with the one that probably most people haven't seen, and that's David Lynch, The Art Life. I don't know if you noticed, but David Lynch has been talked about a lot lately, not just here, but pretty much everywhere in the world, I think. Not just our circles, but he's been getting a lot of words lately.
A lot of words. I like that.
So David Lynch, The Art Life. It is a bare-bones release. I can't remember the last time we've had one of these. Can you?
Well, it's not quite bare-bones, but it's close. And...
Close. One supplement and an essay.
Well, this is the kind of disc that raises my ire a little bit because...
Let's have it.
Yeah. Just like the Ingmar Bergman disc, I'm like, why does this have its own spine? And that's how I feel about this one right now. I probably will change my mind when I see how good and how essential it is.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, does this kind of scream to be a major supplement on another disc.
Yeah, so allow me to cite who I'm dubbing the anti-completionist, and he's right on board with that, is our good friend Michael Hutchins.
Yes.
He was critical of this as well. There's been a lot of criticism about this because basically it's a movie, and I don't know what the interview, I don't know if it's probably not going to be a two-hour interview.
Right.
But it's right now, you can rent it for $4.99 on Amazon or iTunes, anywhere. So basically his suggestion was save yourself, even with the lower price point, and this is a $29.95 MSRP, so it'll probably be sub $20 when it hits Amazon, and of course probably about $15 for the, well, yeah, exactly $15 on the next sale. But he said, why bother buying the disc when you can buy it for $5 on Amazon? So as the completionist, not the anti-completionist, are you, do you see that argument?
I see it for a non-completionist, yeah. No, but this will take its rightful place on my shelf, and I love this cover, and I love the fact that we're getting this. Mm-hmm. But you know, we tie it back to some of the other talk that people have been having on, you know, whether Fire Walk With Me is coming, and it looks like it is. I mean, it just seemed to me and to others that this was the supplement that was going to make that an essential release. So now mm-hmm. we have two releases where you kind of say to yourself, you know, what were they thinking here?
Well, we'll see. And, yeah. And actually, I did see that there was a little thread going on at some community. It might have been on Criterion itself, where people were complaining that, you know, we want David Lynch. Why are you giving us this? He has umpteen other films. Let's have Lost Highway. Let's have Inland Empire. Let's have The Elephant Man. And sure, I think everybody wants these, but I don't know if anybody's really going to, any massive David Lynch fan is going to complain about having something about the filmmaker. You know, maybe you, are you a Lynch fan?
Yes, I am very much. I'm not complaining about the content here at all. I'm actually looking forward to this as a piece of film, so to speak. I'm just from a you know, marketing and packaging standpoint, it just seems a little odd. It is not mm-hmm. going to affect my purchase of this on day one at all.
Well, in that little debate, really, it was just, well, sorry, it was a wine fest. there's always a voice of reason that kind of calmed things down, and I forget who that was, but he suggested that maybe, you know, of course, David Lynch is not easy to work with.
Right.
He doesn't like a lot of supplements on his discs. He doesn't like chapter stops, and Criterion obviously has some form of relationship since we have mm-hmm. Mulholland Drive, Eraserhead. Now we have this. We're probably going to get Fire Walk With Me. So, and this isn't by him. I don't know if he has any vested. I'm sure it's approved by him. So mm-hmm. I'm sure he's very, very happy about it. But you know, if this is a conduit to getting the rest of his library or a portion of his library, I'd say it's more than fine.
And I feel the same way. I was just, you know, kind of playing devil's advocate on the other side of it. But yeah, like I said, you know, bring this on because I'm very anxious to see this. And in fact, we should probably stop talking about it because there's only 7.5 hours till episode 7 of Twin Peaks is on. So we got to move along.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. We could keep going. I have seen it, and I did spend the $4.99 on Amazon. And
yeah.
As a mostly completionist, I fluctuate sometimes, but I end up usually buying everything. Mm-hmm. I'm going to buy it, and part of that is just because it looked fantastic. I watched it on a one thing with streaming. I don't think you get the best transfer, but you do get a lot of his original art, and I think it's photographed well. It's probably all digital, but I could just see it sparkling on the Blu-ray transfer. It is a well, high definition digital transfer. So I don't know what that means. I guess that just means digital transfer. So anyway, the second to last film is The Piano Teacher by Michael Haneke. And here's where I want to correct myself from last week. Sometimes when you're talking about 30 filmmakers in a 2-minute stretch, you just have a big brain fart. So
yes.
Last week I was running through titles and I said Cachet. Actually, I'm probably correcting myself here, and I said cachet by Kiarostomy. So that was two footballs. I got hate twice on for mispronouncing. How do you say his name? Correct me.
Haneke is what I always say.
Haneke, I meant Abbas Kiarostomy. Is it Kiarostomy?
I say Kiarostomy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's probably wrong because somebody, I think it might have been Hutchins again, said that I was talking about a medical procedure. And I joked that I'm about to go in for my annual Kiarostomy. So anyway, last week I just was talking about films and I said, yeah, oh, and Cachet by Kiarostomy. But I know Cachet's by Haneke. And in fact, I love Cachet. Mm-hmm. And I love The Piano Teacher as well. This was very much out of left field. I think we all knew that more Haneke's coming, and maybe everything from Haneke, as far as we know, might be coming.
It's fine with me.
So have you seen Piano Teacher?
No, I have to say that I have not. It has been... Oh, this is embarrassing, but you know, there's things you just don't get around to. I think it's been in my Netflix queue for about 8 years.
Oh, okay.
And
well,
never pulled it up, so now I'm anxious to rectify that finally.
Well, that restraint or procrastination, mm-hmm. maybe probably has served you well in the long run. It's not a film for the whole family, I'll say. Don't watch it with your girlfriend unless she is into that sort of thing. Unless I wouldn't put it to well, you've seen Haneke films, you kind of have an idea how he is, but mm-hmm. so it's maybe a little south of Sallow. Well, it's a lot south of Sallow and Antichrist, but it's. It's north of A Dog's Purpose. Well, I haven't seen A Dog's Purpose, but it's north of The Piano. How about that?
All right.
It's pretty sadistic. It's not one that, in fact, my wife, she's a big fan of this film. She thinks it's a masterpiece. So I asked her, are you looking forward to seeing it again? She hasn't seen it since it came out.
Right.
And the answer was, hell no. I'm not watching that thing again. It's a very difficult movie. Somewhat younger Huppert.
Yeah.
Is fantastic. Maybe my favorite performance from her, and that's a pretty high mark there.
Yes, it is.
I will watch it again. I don't have a weak stomach, but it's a difficult film. I was very pleased to see this, and I hope there's more where this came from. So you're in for a treat, Keith.
Very good.
Maybe we'll have you back to see to see if you could withstand it.
Now you're starting to make it sound like I'm going to do a two girls, one cup reaction video or something. Jeez.
Yeah, no, it's not that bad. But there are a couple moments you could, So the last one, I don't know if this counts because we've known about this for months. In fact, we did a poll, which I'll talk about here in a second, in the Criterion Now group, and somebody chastised me for not throwing Othello on there. But, you know, Othello is going to be great, and I can't wait to see it and talk about it. But does it really count?
I think it counts. It has now been a September title for a couple of months. It's firmly there, and it makes for kind of an expensive September 26th as well.
That's true. Yeah, very much. Well, I'm not going to talk about it again because we talked about it for May. And who knows? Probably won't get delayed again. I think it's usually they get delayed once and for maybe 3-4 months, and that's what this was. And that's then it'll come out. Othello. That's a pretty good September, would you say?
It is, and I will also say that the reason it got delayed is because when it was announced the first time, I was heading off to get rid of some discs, and I got rid of my Othello Laserdisc then, and then found out I had to wait another 4 months to get it. So I'm actually looking forward to seeing this very much so in the new print.
Me too. I saw it on TCM. I think I recorded it. Or no, you know, I haven't seen it. I might have seen it. I know I've seen The Moor of Venice. Which one is that?
Iago.
That is this, right? Yeah. Yeah, this
the
is
Moor of Venice? Oh, yeah,
Moor
this
Venice.
Is the Moor.
Yeah, Othello.
Yeah.
What am I thinking? Talk about brain farts.
I just saw this at the Guthrie like 2 years ago, and I couldn't even remember that.
I have seen this. It's great, but it's you know as you'd expect, it's Orson Welles doing Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. It's not Romeo and Juliet or that O movie. It's good. So anyway, I'm really I've been enjoying these polls we've been doing at the Criterion Now group. We asked this week which September release people were most excited about, and I don't know if you've looked at this yet, Keith, or
I haven't
if you
seen
vote.
It, no.
Okay. Well. Well, I'll let you vote. Which one of these would you are you most excited about?
I think just for basic, interest in something that I haven't seen, I'm going to go with The Piano Teacher.
Okay, that's fair. And same thing, I'm going with Festival. Even though I'm excited for pretty much all of these.
Oh yeah,
that's the one. That's the blind spot that I'm looking to fill. So guess which one was number one?
David Lynch.
Nope. Actually,
Rebecca.
No. David Lynch was last by a long shot. So, you did vote.
Did?
Yeah, you voted for Festival.
Oh, all right. Then I'm with you on Festival.
All right. I guess so. And wait, I voted for Piano Teacher. Boy.
Wait a minute. Hey, we're back to where we started.
So number one by a long shot was Rebecca, and then number two was Festival or The Piano Teacher. Number three was Certain Women. A lot of people are really excited about Certain Women. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people that have seen it have been spoke very highly of it. And Festival was a somewhat distant fourth, and then David Lynch, The Art Life, was a very, very distant fifth. In fact, for a while, I remember when I first looked at the poll, it looked like it might get zero votes. I think it ended up getting five. So that's something. And there are a couple write-ins for Othello, maybe two or three write-ins, but it didn't count. Sorry. It's new announcements only. So you ready to move on?
Of course.
All right. Well, this week we had, this past week was They Live by Night came out on the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
And then this week we have a big release coming out, the Marseille Trilogy, which I cannot wait to dig my heels into. I think we're going to try to do a close-up for that. I hope so. Looking forward to either of these, or have you seen either of these? Oh, no, I know you've seen They Live by Night.
Yeah, in fact, I watched that yesterday. I was on kind of a Nicholas Ray kick yesterday. I watched this and On Dangerous Ground on Filmstruck and enjoyed them both very much.
Cool.
While I was not working on the podcast. And I'm very excited for the Marseille Trilogy as well. I would love to say that I would dive into it this week, but I'm about to go to Dallas for 10 days of work, so I'm not going to get to this probably till the end of the month. But looking forward to it quite a bit.
I'm getting it. I pre-ordered it, but I'm probably not going to get into it until I get back from New York after August. But but I'll get to it one day, and I'll enjoy it very much. So, okay, well, usually we try to pick a newish release to talk about, and I guess this is somewhat newish. It was a Blu-ray upgrade. So this week we're talking about Jean Dielman, 20 Quai de Commerce, or
1023 Quai de Commerce, 1080 Brussels.
Brussels, yeah. 23 Quai de Commerce? Boy.
23, yeah, you're right. 1023 is my old house number. I was confusing.
23 Quai de Commerce,
yeah.
1080 Brussels, 1975. It's considered maybe a feminist masterpiece, but it's 3.5 hours of domestic duties, would you say? A lot of domestic duties, but there is a progression. I have to be careful. I don't want to. It's tough to spoil a 3.5 hour movie, but you can spoil this movie. In fact, Michael Hutchins, we've already cited him about 10 times in this episode, but he has great tidbits. He said that you need to watch it in one sitting. So,
I have.
Did you succeed in that?
I did. It's the second time I've seen it. We don't want any spoilers. We don't want anybody knowing that she makes veal cutlets instead of pork cutlets or anything like that.
That she peels potatoes?
Yes.
I kept on wondering if the dishes would get done. Don't tell me.
But yeah, the second time I've seen this, first time on the original DVD, and then with my momentous new shelving this week, I took 2 days off from work to deal with that, and on Wednesday morning, I sat down and watched this whole thing again for the first time in about 3 years, and was just as engrossed and fascinated. It's hard to kind of express those types of words when you are watching something that is almost objectively kind of boring, but you know, just watching that groove and watching what she's going through, and just, you know, this being the second time that I watched it, you know, in some cases spending less time watching what she's doing with her hands and just kind of looking around the room and looking at her face, looking at the room, looking at the set design, you know, just, you know, feeling the cleanliness but oppressiveness of this smaller apartment. You know, it's, to me, I just find it to be absolutely fascinating. And it's, you know, people will say it's slow, but at the same time, things do move along pretty quickly, because, you know, the first day is spent establishing these routines that she has, and it's not too quickly into the second day before she starts to fuck up a little bit. And, you know, it's, you know, it's amazing, just, you know, just leaving the cover off a soup bowl that can kind of make you go, oh shit, you know. So, you know, I don't want to oversell this to people who haven't seen it or kind of have a preconception of it, because yes, it is slow, and yes, it is methodical and all of that. But if you give into it, this movie will get under your skin pretty quickly.
Okay. So did you succeed completely? 3.5 hours, no breaks, no bathroom, no bladder, no popcorn, no iPad. Or Microsoft
definitely,
Surface.
Definitely no technology. I keep all that out of the room as much as I can. I will say I didn't take a break to do something else, but I did have to run and use the restroom, yes.
Okay, well, that spoiler alert.
Yes.
Keith peed.
Yes.
Well, I did not succeed in that front, but that's because of time. You can only make up so much time. So I watched this over 2 weeknights, which is... Yeah, I'm sorry, Michael. I tried, but I had to watch it. So,
there's a case to be made that you could watch this over 3 days and just make the natural breaks.
Yeah, you could actually. Yeah. As long as you're a discerning viewer, you pay close attention, and and I don't think you're going to forget the routine on day one. But I do think watching it a second time probably makes a bigger difference. I also did not succeed in locking out my technology completely, just because usually I'm pretty good about that. But this, you know, 2 weeknights, I'm catching up with the world. I have to see, do we still have a president? let's see, who's messaging me about the show, or what's... So I did take a few distractions. I have to eat dinner. I'm not going to go into the bladder stuff too. That happened as well. So I watched it over two sittings. So, and I think I got through about 2/3 of it the first sitting, and then I decided it, because the third act, the third day, I think it's shorter.
It is.
So I saved the majority of that for the to focus a little bit. And yeah, I would not recommend, if you don't like slow cinema, and I'll think of say Tarkovsky or that Thai director Tropical Malady. If you don't like that stuff, if you don't like Bellatar, it's probably not for you. In fact, I'd say it's slower than all those combined. Lots of long shots. What a performance, boy! And those long shots where she's, you know. It's her face for 10 minutes, whether she's doing something or just sitting there. Maybe one of my favorite performances ever, actually. And I know that's hyperbole, but
I would go along with that. Definitely Delphine. What is it? Seyrig?
Yeah. She's been in quite a few.
Yeah, I shouldn't even have tried. Yeah. She's got quite a Criterion pedigree.
Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head what else she's been in, but
Marion Bad, and then a couple of the
right.
William Kleins, and also Muriel.
Oh, of course, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's been in other things as well, non Criterion. I'm very quite an actress pedigree. But yeah, this is challenging. I don't see how she. I didn't get a chance, again, time. I didn't get to see many of the features or the supplements. I kind of caught a couple of them. I'd already seen that short film, which I think is also tremendous and kind of a precursor to this. But did you watch any supplements?
Not this time around. I did the first time a few years ago with a DVD. And I just, what I do remember is Chantal and her, you know, having some pretty strong arguments about how they wanted to do these things. You know, Chantal has, you know, I'm kind of, you know, just paraphrasing, but basically, mm-hmm. you know, the bread your cutlets this way. And Delphine was like, no, you do it this way. And, you know, so, I mean, even with this fairly mundane stuff, I think they were very particular and specific about how they did a lot of that.
Yeah, I could see somebody watching this and thinking, oh, well, boy, 3.5 hours. They didn't bother to edit. They just said, hey, go do some laundry or whatever. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Basically improv. But no, it was very meticulously shot, framed. And yeah, so I think really everything you see on screen has been conceived in some way. Maybe there's a little bit of improv on some of the long shots. Obviously, she's a human being, so she has mm-hmm. to... Mm-hmm. She has to emote in a certain way. So, yeah, highly recommend this. I thought it looked beautiful. And you've seen the DVD, so you tell me. I saw it in a classroom. So was it much different?
hard to remember. I just do remember watching it last week, just being very impressed by the clearness of it. And the color seemed to, you know, it is somewhat of a drab movie. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the colors that were there were popping more, and definitely the film grain was fantastic, and yeah. You know, pulls you into that filmic quality as well.
Yeah, as pretty much as filmic as a 70s film can get. A 70s art film, it really does capture that. So even if you, I'm not going to ever advocate this, but if you aren't one for slow cinema and you want to just put it on double speed and see the visuals again, Michael's probably going to be throwing stuff at me because of that, but I'm sure that's going to happen. But anyway, it's a beautiful movie, and actually it's not going to be tomorrow, but one day I will revisit it, probably a couple years later, and next time I will shut out all the technology and I'll close the door, tell my
hermetically
wife.
Sealed.
Yeah, we had a lot of jokes about it, by the way. My wife said, so what is she cooking now? it's like, oh, no, veal, potatoes.
Well, so, I'm two viewings in, and I will see it again at least once. Right.
Well, maybe there's an episode in the making here. Maybe we'll give it some more attention. So let's move on to something a little lighter. Barry Levinson was in the Criterion Closet. He talked about some of his favorite films. So did you get a chance to watch this?
I did watch it, but I was distracted. I didn't find it overly compelling, so I was kind of flipping around with other things. But you know, I've always kind of liked Barry Levinson, and I was glad to see him in there.
I'm glad you said that. Yeah. I was distracted too. Yeah. I usually love these videos, and I'm basically hypnotized, but I think I was more intrigued by Gene Dillman than I was Barry Levinson.
Yeah.
I just couldn't get... I mean, he's fine, you know. I thought some of his choices were okay, but I thought it was just me. I thought he was just basically reaching for whatever, and yeah, it wasn't one of my favorite closet videos, but I think he's fine. Of course, the speculation here is, do you think any Barry Levinson will come to the collection?
Well, I tossed out Diner and you tossed out Wag the Dog, and I think we have kind of covered it there, don't you think?
Yeah. And I don't think either's a great fit, but I could see Wag the Dog because it speaks to a political reality right now. Mm-hmm. I think it... Mm-hmm. Maybe more relevant. I don't know if you've seen it.
Oh, yeah.
Diner, yeah. I think Diner was fine. I just think of it as one of those not quite Brat Pack 80s films, but, you know, in that circle. So I don't remember really if I liked it or not. It's been a long time.
I did. The only other one I could think of, and this is just something that I know that I loved 25 years ago, and my guess is it doesn't hold up, was Tin Men. I really enjoyed that movie back in the day with Danny DeVito, Richard Dreyfuss, John Mahoney. It was a pretty good movie.
Okay.
But boy, I'm kind of grasping here now.
Yeah, I mean, there's Rain Man. I could maybe. There's Sleepers, maybe. How about Toys? Would you buy Toys?
No.
You would not? Wow.
No.
Good Morning Vietnam.
Wait,
maybe.
Well... Yeah, I mean, there are some like that, you know, like Good Morning Vietnam or Rain Man that seem somewhat obvious, but just don't seem to really kind of fit our bill.
Yeah, I'd say Levinson is a good working director. He's had a fine career. He's done some good things, but I don't even know if I'd call him an auteur. And I would just say he's an above average studio director that has had a fine career. So thank you for going into the Criterion Closet, and hopefully you won't listen to us trashing you, because we're really not trashing you, Barry Levinson.
I know you didn't bring it up here, but I was much more interested in Alicia Malone's closet video. I mean, and she doesn't make anything. She just talks about them. So,
oh wait,
you know who that is? Yeah, she did one for the Filmstruck one.
I saw a picture of her in the there, but I didn't see an actual video. Did she?
Oh, that's right. I haven't seen the video. No, I just was reading about her talking about it a little bit, but no, I don't think there's been an actual video yet. Sorry about that.
Okay. Oh, sorry, Alicia. Well, Alicia put it up eventually. No, I think she's interesting, and I think she has interesting taste. I think she's a little younger, and is she Australian?
She is. Yep.
Yeah. So hopefully. And she's not a director. She's more of a film, I guess, academic or critic.
Aficionado,
Aficionado. She's one of us, but she happens to be on Filmstruck. So, I think if she's gets a closet video, do you think maybe I could or you could? No.
Well, not if we just walk in like you did last night. Wait for the invite.
I could take a selfie video.
Yeah, there you go. Well, Ryan Swen got in there, right?
He did, yes. We're actually going to mention him in a second. So, all right, let's talk Monterey Pop. So Monterey Pop has a 4K restoration that Janice is touring. And there's been some social media posts. There was one on The Current. I think that was another David Hudson post. And then the Monterey Pop Festival, it's called MontereyPopFestival50.com. They put a little blurb about the 50th anniversary, so I guess that's right about now is when Monterey Pop happened.
Summer of 67, yeah.
And I think it was June. I could have that wrong, but summer, yeah. But they said that, so Janice is touring it for the 50th anniversary, and they said, quote, "The Criterion Collection is preparing a special 50th anniversary commemorative edition for release this fall." So,
I'm buying this for a third time.
It's not going to be September. So October, November. I think that's your window. I think.
Yeah.
Is this happening, Keith?
Is it happening? I can't imagine that it wouldn't.
Well, has it ever happened before?
What do you mean?
Where there's been a reissue with a new transfer for an existing Blu-ray?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I think this would be breaking new ground. But there are, there are new transfers of older movies all the time. Would you begrudge them if they started upgrading their old catalog with better transfers, or would you be mad?
You know, I would. I don't get mad hardly at any of this stuff. I just get annoyed. But
that's the same. That's fine. Same category.
I think with some of these newer 4K transfers, of existing Blu-rays like this, to me, that would be their foray into 4K discs. You know, if you're gonna do it that third time, make the leap.
You know, maybe this is their foray. Maybe it's gonna be a 4K DVD. That's huge speculation. I know nothing. In fact, this could actually just be a mistake on Monterey Pop's part. They might have just misinterpreted Janice. Oh, Janice. Just somebody tells them, if it comes out on Janus, it's coming out on Criterion.
Could be the same package with a different sticker on it. You know, who knows?
Could be, yeah. So, all right. So, another question: if there's a upgraded 4K transfer of Monterey Pop, all other things being equal, are you going to rebuy it? Is that a completionist best version?
Well, I plan to buy a 4K TV and player by the end of the year. So, yeah, I would rebuy it.
All right. Okay. I'm going to ask the audience, ask the listeners, would you rebuy this? Is anybody angry? So post that in the Facebook, or not angry, but annoyed,
yeah,
or
there
both.
You go. I think just by my very own definition, I kind of have to. I'm a best version collector, right?
There you go. And as I walk the tightrope between completionists and anti-completionists, I think I wouldn't buy it. I think I would. Well, maybe I would buy it if it's a 4K. Although I like Monterey Pop, especially like the Jimmy, but it's not my top tier concert documentary. I would say Woodstock is top tier. I would say Look Back. I would say Gimme Shelter. I'd say Pink Floyd, Live at Pompeii, which of course is not on anything.
I kind of feel the same way, although my go-to in Monterey Pop is the Otis Redding stuff. So it's
Otis
just,
is great too, yeah.
Yeah. So there's definitely plenty there. But yeah, sitting down to watch it as a complete set, you know, my lack of love for the Mamas and the Papas, I don't need to see that too much. You know? And there's a lot of them in there.
Yeah, there is. And I like the Janis stuff. Mm-hmm. Janis Joplin, not Janis Films. Janis with an I, not a U. So yeah, I guess we'll see. But I thought that was very strange. I don't know. So okay, well, there are some new Phantom pages coming up, and we're more into the odds and ends news and notes segment. And a lot of this gets to be rampant speculation. The Phantom pages haven't really turned out to be much lately. I think a lot of them have turned out to be Filmstruck editions. But I think they're worth talking about here, and one in particular has me kind of excited. So we have Joachim Trier, and by the way, that is the same Joachim Trier that Jonathan talked about last week, who's going to be at the Bergman Fest. I think he had the name wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But he's done a Closet video, and his was very good, you know, a lot better than Levinson's. So he's done some interesting work. I've only seen... Louder Than Bombs, which I thought was fine, but I wouldn't see that as a Criterion title. But by reputation, I think Reprise, whatever it's called, it's pronounced, or Oslo, August 31st, seem to have decent followings. So maybe, but I think it's probably Filmstruck. You?
Well, for now, for sure. I think that they would probably are going to, you know, put up his three films as a little category. I was actually kind of thinking with the love that Criterion, you know, shows Hooper when they can, that Louder Than Bombs might be it, but I've never seen it, so I don't know.
Yeah, I could see that for Filmstruck.
Okay.
Wait, Louder Than Bombs is a Smith album. Okay, it's the same title. Just making sure. No more brain farts. I can't afford any of those. I get too much hate as it is. And then there's Ulrich Seidel. I speak from pronunciation. I don't know.
I would have said Seidel, but who knows?
Seidel, potato, potato.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Yeah, let's. He produced the Paradise Trilogy, which I haven't seen and actually wasn't on my radar until this came out, but it seems kind of interesting. Paradise Love, Paradise Faith, and Paradise Hope. Mm-hmm. So that seems, it could be a Filmstruck thing, but it could be a fun little box set trio. Do you know it?
Nope. Just like these are Phantom pages, this is Phantom information for me as well.
All right, well, let me get to the third one then, which you definitely know that don't know this guy. His name is Craig McCall, and he's a documentary filmmaker, and so I'm making a very wide reach here. In fact, this might be ridiculous, but he's worked on a lot of Jack Cardiff documentaries or little features, and there was one, I forget what it's called. I'll look it up as we're talking. But Jack Cardiff, I think the films that we're going to get of his in the collection, except for maybe Philadelphia Story, he did that, right? I think we have a chance for that.
I think it's been said other places that's a pretty strong possibility.
But no, actually, he didn't do that.
All right, then we're not getting it.
I think we might get it, but it wasn't Cardiff. But he's done some Powell and Pressburger and some other films that we have. He's done some classic Hollywood.
I'm thinking of Black Narcissus as one of his. Bigger ones, right?
Oh, yeah, yes, but that's out. The Red Shoes, yep. Of course. He did Pandora and the Flying Dutchman, which is Albert Lewin, which I think is interesting, but it came out in Kino. The African Queen, I don't think that's a Criterion title yet. Barefoot Contessa. So anyway, my wild reach is A Matter of Life and Death. And my logic is because if you're going to have a Jack Cardiff documentary, you're going to highlight the cinematographer, I can't think of a more fitting film. Stairway to Heaven it's also called by the Powell and Pressburger. So are you familiar with it? Have you seen it?
You know what? It's kind of one of my holy grails that I've never seen. I mean, I'm a huge Powell and Pressburger fan, and haven't seen it, and it, to me, that makes the most sense too. And you know, it's maybe hopeful thinking, but that's the one I'd like it to be.
It is so good, Keith. So good. It's so amazing. So let's cross our fingers together. Hopefully my wild, rampant speculation is accurate. The one thing about Powell and Pressburger restorations, so Scorsese and I forget her, is it Schoonmaker, Spoonmaker?
Schoonmaker.
Schoonmakers, one of those. That's Powell's former spouse and editor. Mm-hmm. They've been working pretty diligently, but one at a time, on restorations. And it's been a while. I think the last one that came out was, might be the Red Shoes. Or was it, it's been a while.
That's the last one I remember, but yeah, I don't know.
Maybe Blimp. I can't remember which one came first, Blimp or Red Shoes. So I'd heard rumors they were working on a Canterbury Tale, but not very substantiated. But mm-hmm. if they're going for the next big picture, I would think this is it. So I don't know. On a 1 to 10 speculation meter, how likely do you think this is?
5 years ago, I would have gave it a 3. With the way home video rights are these days, I give it an 8. I think it's one that they definitely want to get, and we'll move heaven and earth to get it.
Well, mostly heaven, but...
Yes, you saw what I did there.
Yeah, I did. So, all right, well, we'll see. And again, it might just be a Jack Cardiff little grouping that shows up on Filmstruck, and they just throw this up there. So if that happens, then... We'll see. All right, yeah, we have a lot of speculation this week, so let me move on. Abbas K...
Good old, the other AK.
Abbas Colostomy. I'm sorry, that's disrespectful. So his final film was 24 Frames. It played Cannes this year. There's a rumor, sort of substantiated, that it's going to be distributed by Janus Films. So I don't know if an acquisition's been picked up yet, but you mentioned Ryan Swinn earlier. He was at the Seattle International Film Festival, and he spoke with Ahmad Kiarostami. I'm never going to get that right, guys.
So, Kiarostami.
Ahmad, is that his son? I'm not sure. So he spoke with Ahmad, and Ahmad said that 24 Frames is going to be distributed by Janus. So a lot of times these festival tidbits come true. I would love to see any more Abbas K in the collection. Your opinion?
My opinion is much like Powell and Pressburger, anything they can get their hands on, they're going to do their best. Even with it just being a slight rumor out there, I think that's points to at least the intention being made.
Yeah, and we talked a week or two ago about, I think it was A24. No, but not somebody picked up the rights to his earlier work. So I'd say there's a good chance something of his will come out. And by the way, I think the screening was Taste of Cherry.
Taste of Cherry.
Yeah. I'm having lots of brain farts. okay, well, another bit of speculation is that Personal Shopper is coming out this year by Olivier Assayas. I think he was at I don't have this pulled up, but I think he was at another screening, another festival, and he said that he expects all of his work to come out on Criterion. I think the reason, let me see. Oh, I had a link. Well, the link was just a Criterion Current article,
right?
This is another Reddit nugget. So somebody at said they were at a Q&A a couple months ago, and they asked him whether Criterion would be releasing more, and he said all of them. And so the guy said, I don't know if he means really all of them, but he speculated that Personal Shopper and Irma Vep. So okay, 1 to 10 speculation meter. What do you give this?
All of it, or just Personal Shopper?
Personal Shopper.
I give it a 7, but for my own interest, I give it a 2.
But you'll still buy it.
After Clouds of Sils Maria, I'm not. I'll stay non-committal on that.
Okay. Well, I'm just gonna. I kind of like that, so I'm just gonna leave that there. But all right. So what? 1 to 10 for all of it. There's a lot already, actually.
Yeah, but like Irma Vep, I mean, I'm going to draw a blank, but there's a couple from that period that I think really could be great Criterion. So I think that, yeah, I would tend to believe Esaias that there are plans afoot to do all of that. I'll give it a nine. Yeah.
Keep in mind, this wasn't Esaias. This was somebody probably hearing Esaias say something. It's kind of like a game of telephone. But
of course it is.
I think Demon Lover could be a chance. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, so, that's all the one I was trying to think of.
Make it happen, guys. And then, okay, I think this is the last. So this isn't actually speculation. This is just something I wanted to mention. Hal Hartley's Henry Fool trilogy has a Kickstarter out, and so what he's going to try to do, his own company, I think it's called Possible Films,
mm-hmm.
wants to put together a Blu-ray deluxe super edition of Henry Fool trilogy, and that's Henry Fool, and then I forget the name of the next one, and I forget I think Ned Rifle is the third one, and then the other one's not coming to me. So I've seen this one. I've seen Hal Hartley's name speculated for Criterion. He's one of those 90s indies, kind of like Stillman, that could be up their alley. Anyway, my wife's a huge fan of the films, and I enjoyed Henry Fool, so we contributed to it. So if you want to, and it needs help, so if it's going to happen, you're going to have to kick some money, or some people will. On your radar at all, do you know him or care?
I've seen Henry Fool, and I've seen a couple other Hal Hartleys. What's the one with the monster living in the warehouse? But I can't think of it. But Henry Fool, Faye Grimm, and Ned Rifle was Faye Grimm was the
Faye
second
Grimm.
One.
Thank you. Which is Parker Posey.
Yeah, he's a director that I've always been somewhat interested in, but never searched it out. So yeah, something like this. I love things when they're nicely packaged like this. So I would check that out.
Yeah, he says that there's going to be a nice book, and he said there's also going to be he's going to include a CD of his own original music. I have no idea how good it is, but why not? I don't even think I can play a CD anymore. But that's sad. I have over 1,000 Blu-rays, 1,500 Blu-rays. Can't play a CD. And he's also he's going to try to do a documentary about making all three films. I think it could be neat. But it was at. I think it got to like 16,000 its first day, and it's now at 17,000. So, and that's 5 days later. So, his goal is 100,000. So, I don't know if he's going to make it. He'll need a lot of word of mouth, but rooting for him. So, okay.
And just so I can prove that I wasn't being crazy, the movie I'm thinking of is No Such Thing by Hal Hartley.
There's no such thing, Keith. You're lying.
Oh yeah, previously titled Monster, Sarah Polley and Helen Mirren.
Haven't seen it, no. So, but I think he's an interesting filmmaker. I would like to see this come to fruition, just for him, rather, you know, and for me. My wife has a Henry Fool poster, so of course I want it.
Well, yes.
I lied about coffee.
And I did get coffee.
I saw it in the fridge. I thought, okay, I gotta. This is a six-pack that I have three left, and all three were podcasts. So
good for you. Podcast beer.
Podcast beer. All right, so as I get my podcast beer in my I won't get drunk, don't worry. Would you like to get into short takes, Keith?
Let's do some short takes.
What do you got?
Well, as I said earlier, I kind of got a Nick Ray kick yesterday, but I know you've got plans for that in the future, so... This morning, when I woke up, I pulled a disc off the shelf that I had never seen in its HD form. I had the original DVD back in the day, as they say, and I watched it about a decade ago, and then I watched it again this morning, and that is In the Mood for Love. I was finally in the mood for In the Mood for Love.
First time?
No, second time.
Oh,
but,
sorry.
But... first time in HD and the first time as a more mature film goer. And have to say that I'm not going to say anything here that nobody else hasn't already said, but I sat here this morning just absolutely gobsmacked at the quality of this film.
Oh, it's terrible, isn't it?
Oh, it's just the worst. I mean, just blah, 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 blah. I mean, just incredible style, incredible story. You know, I don't even, like I said, I'm not going to bring anything new to the table on this, but it's just it's such a mastery of filmmaking and such naturalistic performances. You know, even having seen many foreign films, you know, sometimes it can be kind of hard to separate, you know, what you're reading on the screen and really making a good decision on whether the actors are pulling it off well. And, you know, most times in Criterion's they are. But especially with this film, I mean, just the performances in this film are just par excellence, bar none. Mm-hmm. It's just
yeah, two legends there. Yeah,
it really is. It really is. And you know, Wong Kar-wai, he has a mastery of what he's doing there. And watched it this morning, and after we're done here, I'm going to dive into those supplements because
nice.
It's for something I had seen before. It's kind of hard. It's kind of odd to say this, but you know, the second time was a bit of a transformative experience.
Nice
cinematic experience. Just one of the best.
You know, come to think of it, I have that disc, but I have not watched it in HD either. I love the film, and in fact, last week or the week before, we talked about Deepan, and they mentioned, and I'm not comparing Deepan to In the Mood for Love, although I think compared to others, I've overpraised Deepan, but they talk about the relationship between those two characters and how they were going for a Wong Kar-wai kind of feel, you know, the subtleties of the, like the gestures, the, you know, it's not your 40s smooth, you know, big kisses. It's the little things. So I'm it's up to the viewer to decide whether they pulled that off in Deepan, but I think in The Mood for Love, it's just about the perfect romanticism blended with the scenery. So yeah, love the movie, and maybe I need to watch it again soon.
Yeah, we can stop if you want to.
Sure. Well, Twin Peaks, you got
to. Yes, exactly. Got to get to that.
Clock's ticking. I still haven't seen that, but in fact, this is the first time in a while we haven't talked about David Lynch as a standalone topic. So
I bet.
Yeah, I think we deserve a break. All right, well, my short take, and I'm going to be pretty brief here because I actually didn't watch anything this week with traveling, and a little girl named Jean Dillman took a lot of my time this week. So, but a couple weeks ago, I'd watched Design for a Living, which is Ernst Lubitsch's 1932 classic.
32, I think it's, yep.
Okay. Pre-code, and boy, is it pre-code. In fact, it was Doug had recommended this a few shows ago, or maybe a couple months ago, and it's a film that I love Lubitsch, but it was a blind spot, and it's been sitting on my Criterion Unwatched shelf among, it's a dwindling number, but there are probably, I think I've seen about 80% of them now, so that's not bad, but there are some big ones waiting for me. And my take was that it was very good. I think Lubitsch is pretty consistent. You're going to get really good to great. And I'd say this was more on the good side. However, boy, is this thing naughty. So I enjoyed it because it's 1932 and it's about a threesome, basically.
Yep.
A love triangle / threesome. All of the above. And at times they're subtle about it. At times less
not
subtle.
So much. Yeah,
and at times kind of overt. In fact, even the word sex gets thrown about in reference to by the female. She references whether she's going to have sex with them or not, and I'm like, wow, this is a classic film. What did Mr. Hayes say? No, he didn't say diddly squat. So
you probably watched it and said, I got to get a damn code together.
He said, oh shit, they're talking about sex. So anyway, it was, I recommend it. It's not your, all of Lubitsch films are pretty watchable. So it's very enjoyable. It's Hollywood comedy. It has the Lubitsch touch. Not my favorite. I think my favorite Lubitsch is probably maybe Trouble in Paradise or maybe, To Be or Not to Be. To Be or Not to Be is probably my favorite, or maybe The Shop Around the Corner. Anyway, I love Lubitsch.
I'm right there with you. I'd probably say Trouble in Mind over, but they're all good. They just are.
Smiling Lieutenant. Oh man,
yeah, here we go.
Don't put me on the spot. So anyway, Lubitsch is great. It's a good disc. So yeah, shall we get to Filmstruck?
Well, I want to make one little quick point about Gary Cooper in that, because to me, in my mind, he's just that stereotypical staunch conservative, 1950s conservative older actor. And it's interesting because I really pretty much only get that from his persona and his off-screen, persona, to say it again. Mm-hmm. But with this and, High Noon being one of the most liberal movies ever made, it's kind of a dichotomy with him that's very interesting to note, I think. Huh.
Okay, and Meet John Doe is kind of, I don't know if that's conservative or liberal or both.
I don't recall. High Noon's very liberal. That's all I know.
Okay, yeah, I've not been a fan of Gary Cooper, and I think he was fine in this. I forget who it was that was first cast and couldn't take it, but whoever it was, I thought they would be better.
I'm not a big fan either. It was just, it's interesting to see him kind of loosen up a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, High Noon is fantastic, but it's not because of Gary Cooper.
Right, exactly.
All right, sorry to swing you along, so you ready for Filmstruck?
Yeah, I've heard of this.
Sorry. I shouldn't take a swig of beer when it's my
turn. You wanted me
to talk
more. Sorry.
I know. That was my cue. If I have a beer in my mouth, you talk. I guess I have to talk here. The first thing is I got a Roku, and I got it by accident. I don't know if you heard about the TV debacle. I'm not going to get into a long story again, but so we ended up cutting the cord, and we got Sling TV. And I messed up with my Amazon subscription, so I had to get it canceled and reactivated. And so I signed up for what they called the Roku bundle. And I just thought it was, okay, well, I'm getting away from Amazon. I'm going to go to Roku, and that's just their partner. But all I cared about is the login password. And I got that, and I was able to watch Sling TV on my TV. But then 3 days later, I got a Roku. So that was the bundle. I got a free Roku. So nice. Anyway, I have an Amazon TV upstairs, but I think I'm going to try Filmstruck on the Roku, see how it works. So not yet, but in the weeks to come. So do you have a Roku or Amazon, or what do you use?
I do. I mostly use Apple TV, and that's where I do most of my Filmstruck watching. In fact, I put the app upper left-hand side so that it always just says Filmstruck along the top. It's kind of nice. But
nice.
With my Oppo DVD player, it does have it's kind of odd. It's a special MHL port for a different type of Roku stick. Hmm. So I've had one for a few years, and I just barely ever use it. I was going to use it for Warner Archive at one point. But I did get an email from Filmstruck a few weeks ago saying, would you like to be a Roku tester? And I said, sure, why not? So I watched a couple things on there. It works just fine. It's the same interface as what's on the Apple TV. And, I never even got around to even giving them any feedback. It seemed like a week later, all of a sudden, they said it was available. And I said, well, you don't need me anymore. So
they sure don't. Yeah, this is actually the Roku Express. So I think it's the lower version, but it's fine. All right, well, let's get into Filmstruck. We have our main channel. We're running long. Is there an opportunity for speed round? Probably not. Well, it's a light week for Filmstruck, kind of. So, this is not light at all, but the main channel is Satyajit Ray. And in fact, when you told me you were on a Ray kick and it'd be no problem not talking about They Live by Night, I thought you were talking about this Ray. It's like, okay, I got plenty of Ray to talk about. in the main channel, 17 films, if I counted correctly, were added to Filmstruck. And so it has the usual suspects. It has Apu, The Music Room, The Big City, Debbie. Well, actually, Debbie has not been out before, has it?
I don't think so.
But it has a whole bunch of others. Charolata is a big one. And there's a ton of Ray films, and I've seen somewhere between, probably about a third of them, maybe more than that. But some I want to see, like, well, there's all the ones from the late Ray. I saw the chess players. There's the Holy Man, the Hero, the Elephant God, the Coward, Three Daughters, Rabindranath Tagore, Devi, and yeah, the rest I've seen. The rest are on disc. So yeah, wow, big Ray dump. Have you seen the ones that aren't on disc?
No, I haven't. So right. I was saying, I think I've seen about a third of these, or maybe a little less. So,
have you seen all the ones on the Eclipse?
I have. Yep.
Okay, so we're at the same the same pace.
We're really about at the same place. Yeah, I got some work to do here. Look at all these. This is good.
I think we're actually at about half. Although I haven't seen the Big City yet. That's been on my radar, or on my queue. So yeah, and then so there are 17 films in the main channel. I'm sure those will recycle in the next month or two.
I'm sure.
But then there were three films added to the Criterion channel, which was that one that I'm not going to say again, the multisyllabic film, The Hero and The Holy Man. And these three I haven't really heard of. Devi is pretty well known. In fact, I thought Devi would come to the collection. Kind of disappointed that hasn't yet, but they all have Criterion branding. In fact, I'm pretty sure that Criterion has the rights to everything of his.
It seems like that came out a couple years ago.
It did, yeah.
Yeah.
But no discs have come out. What's the deal?
Yeah.
Sorry, I was taking a drink. That meant you talk.
Well, I was taking a breath, so you were supposed to.
All right, well, since we already kind of transitioned into the Criterion channel, we'll talk about the few editions this week, and it's been pretty slim. And in fact, the last couple weeks have been a little slim. And in fact, I've seen some hate about that. But the short and feature was The Lamp and Kronos. And The Lamp was an early Polanski. And it was one I hadn't heard of before. And having seen it, I'm okay with that. I mean, it was fine. But when you see the other early Polanski work, it's a lot more experimental. Maybe I didn't pay enough attention to it, but did you watch it?
Not here. I mean, if it's one that's on the Knife in the Water disc from years ago, I have seen it.
I
watched all of them at the time. Yeah, they didn't really stick with me at all.
Yeah, it's paired with Kronos, and I believe it's because it was really it's an object, and it wasn't just the lamp. I think there was a doll or something. It's been like 3 days, and I forgot it. Whereas, of course, Kronos, the scarab, is the object that's kind of at the heart of the film. All right, well, moving right along, we have another digital spine, which means nothing to you because you own it, and so do I, but Multiple Maniacs was released. You know, I seem to think this has been on there before, for a while, actually, so I don't know why they drew attention to it this month.
I wonder if it's just by, you know, bringing the supplements in. I don't know, were the supplements available then, too?
You know, I think you're right. I think the movie was on Filmstruck before the disc was on.
Before the disc, yep.
And so I think you're right. Now it's the entire spine. So if you don't want to buy the John Waters film, go ahead and watch this. And then the Friday double feature was Late Spring and Donkey Skin. And when I first saw this, I thought, what in the world is the connection? And so the connection is, I'll read from Filmstruck, can a father and daughter be too close? Ozu and Demi respond with a tender maybe and a candy-colored yes. So which one is the yes, Keith?
I have no idea.
Well, you've seen them both, right?
No.
You haven't?
No, I have not seen Donkey Skin.
All right. Well, Donkey Skin is the one that's too close. That's the incestual,
Oh, yeah, was that Dave Eve saying, who the hell puts this out for Father's Day weekend or something like that?
He might have said that, yeah. That Criterion does. There's your answer.
There's your answer.
And so, yeah, I think you father and son can be too close. So listeners, don't get that close. That's sick. Mm. But both are, well, Late Spring is fantastic.
Of course.
Donkey Skin is fine. I need to give it another look because I think I was... I think that's a movie you have to see twice because it's so bonkers that it's weird. So yeah, that's it for Criterion, the Criterion channel. So kind of slim.
Well, along those lines, I mean, and you were saying that people have been complaining about it, and I think I've said this before too, but It's interesting because I love the Criterion Channel. I love that it's all there. But just from a pure interest standpoint, maybe it's because I own all the discs, but it just seems like the Filmstruck main channel just seems to be more active, more colorful, more interesting things going on. And I wish that the Criterion Channel would kind of up their game a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's been pretty decent. The main channel has good. I mean, every Saturday you're going to get some new grouping, but a lot of times those movies are already out on the main channel
True.
Or the Criterion Channel.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I'm able to see ahead of time. And there's going to be an Adventures in film movie going this week. In fact, it's out Monday, so by the time you hear this, you'll probably see it. And yeah, a digital spine, a shortened feature, and a double feature. So let me see. Any dumps? And yeah, that's it. So yeah, hopefully July they'll beef that up a little bit. But I'm still fine with Filmstruck.
Oh, me too. Love it.
Yep. Lots of content there. All right. Well, am I done with my beer? I'm about an inch away, but we're done with the episode, so I better finish up. What's your piece of flair, Keith? This is anything interesting about film that you've encountered you want to bring up? What do you got?
Well, a couple things. I bought that big Renoir doc biography a couple weeks ago. I have yet to jump into
nice.
That. I think you've read it, right?
No, I bought the Kindle version.
Oh, okay.
And I haven't
okay.
even touched it. Did you get the actual paperback? Book?
It's the paperback. It's the big
oh,
one, yeah.
Cool.
So looking to jump into, probably on my trip here this week, I'll jump into that.
Yeah.
But more specifically, and since we're talking about Filmstruck, I was curious at the Peter Bogdanovich, early Bogdanovich category on Filmstruck, and I did
right.
watch the 40-minute interview with Alicia Malone. You know, she seemed very happy to be there and very interested in what he had to say. To be honest, I don't know how Bogdanovich can tell these same stories over and over and over and over again, because, you know, people ask him a lot about his early career, but it was very interesting to watch, and I was glad to see it. But the one thing that I really got out of that was I had never seen Targets before. You know, I've heard so much over the years about Peter Bogdanovich's first film, Targets, worked with Roger Corman, Boris Karloff. To me, it always seemed just much more academic, that it was something you just knew if you're a film buff. And to be able to actually see it was very interesting. I'm a big fan of 60s American film, even television, you know, even before we got into the... you know, into the great American decade of filmmaking, just seeing how the 60s are portrayed on film. And I was very, very interested. It's not a great movie, but I was interested in mm-hmm. Targets. I loved just the matter of factness of having a serial killer on film right then. They didn't spend a lot of time explaining why he was. It was just that he was not a happy guy, and you know, his domesticity at home with his wife and living with his parents, really just kind of matter of fact. And then almost kind of a brilliant stroke of then tying that to a completely different movie of, you know, Boris Karloff, you know, deciding he's going to, you know, thinly veiled version of himself. I forget what his name is in the movie, but basically going to quit the film industry because, you know, they don't make his kind of films anymore, and how they kind of just mushed those two stories together at the end. I mean, it doesn't work mm-hmm. that well, but the two separate stories before they get there, I find them actually pretty fascinating. And, You certainly see with Bogdanovich his natural flair at making a film. And I have to say, I mean, he's acted a few times, and I have to say he's pretty damn good in this thing. I mean, I think he's better in this than he is in The Sopranos, you know, just sitting there, you know, being a psychiatrist the whole time, or psychologist the whole time. But I thought his scenes with Boris Karloff were quite interesting and fun to watch. So... definitely one of those movies that you watch and you kind of forget about it as soon as you're done with it, but very glad to have finally seen it and fill in that little piece of Bogdanovich history for myself.
Yeah, I kind of forgot it, but I do remember it very much as a post-Kennedy film. And then,
yes,
I don't want to say pre-Vietnam, because I think it's probably concurrent with Vietnam, but very much a Vietnam type of film.
Well, I think he was supposed to have been home from Vietnam, too, as
right,
well.
Right, yeah. So it's 68, 69, so it's probably right about the towards the beginning of that that war. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a good film, exciting film, but yeah, not his best. But so anyway, my piece of flair has been some music documentaries. And this is because I've been on a road trip for 3 days, and my wife likes to watch golf, of all things. So I have to put some stuff on the iPad that's kind of light, especially when you're on a beer tour. And so actually just in general, I've kind of been on a music documentary kick. So I watched the Stone Roses one a couple weeks ago.
Oh.
And it was good, but it's mm-hmm. it's really, if you're not a fan of the Stone, it's kind of fan service, but it's still fun to watch them get back together. And then over the weekend, I watched the Give Me Shelter Give Me Shelter, the Iggy Pop and the Stooges, which I enjoyed quite a bit. That was Jarmusch. In fact, I'd say that's my favorite Jarmusch film in about a decade or two.
Really?
Yeah. But that speaks more for, that doesn't speak for his work. I'm probably in the minority on that. I was kind of mixed on Patterson, so yeah, don't shoot me. And then I began the Pulp documentary. And I'm sure Tim will be disappointed, but I wasn't quite feeling that. It just, they didn't quite have the energy. I thought it was more about Sheffield and about the city. So I might not finish that one just because, you know, if I want to watch Pulp playing music, I'll just watch YouTube.
Yeah,
but
a little unfocused.
But I might, yeah, a little bit. And also, I think they're a fine band. They're kind of a pop band, but they don't really have that oomph, playing live, and maybe that's just me. So
I can see that.
I'm sure there are a lot of Pulp fans that are probably going to be very angry about that. But I watched that really because the Jarvis Cocker Meantime supplement. So I wanted to see what they're about as far as the class systems. I'll probably will finish it. But and I was looking through trying to find more music documentaries, but I've seen pretty much all of them. But if there's like a must not miss music documentary that you think I should see, please let me know, and hopefully I haven't seen it.
Documentary specifically or concerts or
yeah, think about it. So that's it, Keith. Thanks for joining me. It's been a while.
It has been a while, and this has been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's
and,
been fun.
You're helping me brush off the cobwebs and get back into this.
All right. Well, I'm not going to put any pressure on you for hour eight, but I do want to hear it. I'll just say that. So.
Oh, it's coming. It's coming.
It's Matt. Never mind. Take your time.
That's right. Yeah.
All right.
Start
well,
over.
Well, the show can be found at, we're really the Criterion Now Facebook group has been going pretty well. So you can find us there, and you can find it on iTunes on the Criterion Cast Master Feed or the Criterion Now Feed. You can find me on Twitter at AWES505 and Keith. Can you be found now? Are you out of your sabbatical and on the social?
I am reachable at on Twitter at Key Productions, KEE, and CriterionCompletion.com, and of course any one of our various and sundry Facebook groups.
There's a lot of them.
Yes.
And I just added one, so. All right, great episode. Thanks for joining, Keith.
Thanks very much.